All right, we are live. It is 11:30 in the AM here. Monday, October 17th, coming at you from a beautiful Belgrade, Serbia, where I remind you that we are under a blockade embargo. As we have not had a port access, sovereign port access to the Adriatic since the, 75,000 Montenegrin voters so that's been 15 years now. And that means that Serbia relies on probably the port at Koper, probably Slovenia, to receive a lot of stuff by sea. How else, when you're landlocked artificially as the result of the Djukanovic mafia? It's a part of the Serbian mafia in Montenegro. But where they've escalated this is they deny that they themselves are, so I don't know what they would call themselves. Anyhow, without this warm water, without this Adriatic access, the EU self-imposed sanctions on Russian oil by sea. So this is a specific, the sanctions are specific and enumerated, and they account for all types of different potential and real existing methods of transit. And so you've heard about, which ones sometimes are named as like excluded. And you're like, oh, that's kind of interesting. What's going on in the EU that's preventing absolute instantaneous suicide? If looking at the Iran-Iraq war, how the cabal managed both sides against each other in that conflict, how might the, when I say managed, I don't mean that they were in control of them, but they managed different types of support. How the U.S. can try to simulate parity between Russia and the EU just so that they're close enough to be for Europe to be getting destroyed instead of capitulating more quickly. Actually, what we're seeing in Ukraine is a microcosm of an expanded war throughout Europe, where the cabal safely operating from perhaps London or Langley will no doubt be willing to continue this on down to the last European. I'm looking at I don't look at the market data. That's not my realm of proficiency. I mean, I can recognize nonsense most of the time, as well as anyone can, and to recognize, good arguments. And I'm not, unfamiliar with the the area of expertise, but. I'm not unfamiliar with specialization rather in economics. I mean, I understand the basic principles, like a 101 type stuff, but so I don't follow these things except when I think there's something happening, and I'll check it against what more reliable people And whatever that means, and by reliable, I mean, you know, maybe a tenth or a fifth of the stuff that winds up on websites. You know, that publish on like alternative theories on monetary policy. And well, you have like Zero Hedge, or there's a number of them, but I guess Zero Hedge being the most prominent. I look at really more things in relation to social movements and messaging, especially media messaging, as well as the geopolitical in the area of, well, more international relations and diplomacy, those, that arena of things. And I'm good at recognizing patterns. Although a problem in human cognitive processes, in how we theorize, is we might project a pattern onto a phenomenon that's truly sui generis. Well, it's good to be aware of the limitations of our thinking. And with that said, I'm looking heavily at both the movement of actual units and positions in the Ukrainian front in general of this global conflict, as this is a very hot war zone of the global conflict. The preparations underway in the EU, the types of when elections were planned, and the outcome of certain elections within EU countries, and in context with what's happening in the US. Now, with the elections, one possibility, therefore, especially because of the American angle and the general unpopularity of supporting Ukraine down to the last American taxpayer, will be something like a different issue. Okay, the attitude will change enough to justify whatever else they kind of throw in with the electronic voting games and all that, because that's not resolved going into this. I mean, we're here going into November 2022 with something like 50 or 60% of the voters in the last, from the last presidential election, thinking that the recognized outcome was at odds with the actual outcome. People have to understand the political crisis underway in the United States, and how also what's happened among that voting bloc is they're very narrative invested. These are like MAGA voters, and they're very narrative invested, and they don't view news events or media events or global events like, you know, an assassination here, a company disappearing in one part of the world, and a war somewhere else. They connect these dots sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly, but there's the narrative here. It doesn't mean that it's false. That's why we have the term false narrative, is to distinguish the fact that not all narratives are false. Just an objective, it should be a neutral term to say narrative. All the indicators to me show this conflict escalating. You know, whether before or after American election or a few other developments is unclear to me. But you have to put together, I mean, you know, we could make the list together, but you have first of all, I mean, what should stand out to us is the Russians adding about, I think it's conservative to say at this point they'll be adding 400,000 to 500,000. I'm going to mark 500K because I know that something like 470,000 is very much expected already. So you have a combined conscription and volunteer force of 500,000, but 300,000 definitely, 380,000 definitely entering into the conflict, technically as we speak, in terms of their deployment, what they're doing and towards what. So, I mean, all the orders they're carrying out now are towards that, if not in that. So they're activated. That's huge. Now, the messaging stuff from Europe, the Italian election outcome, This is, I know this can be difficult to appreciate, okay, but I trust that we're all able to manage, okay, understanding this. The Italian election outcome both signifies this unique and kind of almost bizarre orientation of Italy between its social, they have like kind of social identitarian movements of the right that are populist also and have much of the economic platform of the left. But are very anti-communist, and some have different views on Mussolini. Some, obviously, the whole tradition, except outside of you know, liberal conservatism in of Italy's right, does connect in some way to that period. So, the 20 years. So this is only one consideration, but just play with this one, okay? That government is the way that the social movements and the way how this works is the Putin phenomenon is very popular in these right populist movements in Italy. But he's also popular in very deep aspects of the left, in Italy's left. And also there's kind of this in Italy, a kind of post-left but the point being that in this whole terrain, what this government is providing cover for is that while it represents a lot of these aspirations of kind of Italian conservative social identitarianism, which actually is very Russia leaning in terms of the information war, the people in this milieu also, however, who are aspects of the Gladio network of out of Italy's historic far right that were operationalized by NATO intelligence also still operate in this milieu. And these guys are also end up being in the different soldiers of fortune or however that fought on the Croatian side in the Yugoslav Civil War, on the NATO Croatian side. And sometimes these guys are in the French or Spanish Legion if they have relatives or descendants in Hispania or France. Just a lot of weird stuff and different, like Italian broad paramilitary groups connected to NATO or out of NATO veterans of Italy. So this is a very strange thing. And you can see it like in groups like Casa Pound. So the whole, you need this government in terms of their support for the Ukraine while also trying to say they support Serbia and support Russia. Well, our guy died. They said that one of the Nazis during the Maidan went up to some like building to or a pole, like a whatever flag pole, and was putting the Casa Pound flag, right? The Casa Pound flag, it's like that turtle thing, which that American white supremacist FBI created police thing. I wonder how Steve Bannon feels seeing like all of his hard work like being run in operations like outside of his income. He got jacked. It happens to all of us. These Bannon networks of Gladio kind of to compete with the growth of like the of Putin's popularity in different spontex or syncretic and post left, post right or like conservative revolutionary or whatever. I'm not equating these terms. These are like different things. These are commas. That those were not examples given of a single thing. Now, with Liz Truss in the UK, this is a clear sign. Yes, I know that there's odds like 6 to 1 if you're a betting man. But I would say be careful. She could be out, but she's a perfect type of Biden to have to go into a growth of the conflict now because it's a very clear sign that you don't have a person with any potential of independent action or even the hint of recalcitrance or hesitation, like the way that Johnson might have been. So being perceived. I mean, so it's all, you know, the sign of having a mind control fucking moron, like you would have a Truss or Biden, shows that the Anglos are like kind of lined up like 1-1. You see on that, they're showing the same symbol, they're showing the same sign of where they have their governments at right now in this moment. Now, the reason I mentioned election integrity in the situation in the United States is it's unclear to me what the outcome of November will be for you. I was going to say for you foreigners. No, sorry. For you international audience, what's the whole fucking, I'm like, I'm in fucking Serbia. What the hell am I saying? But just for folks not kind of go into the whole what's happening in the U.S. thing, as we said, there's a high amount of distrust in election outcomes, both parties. Basically, the entire left wing, and that's a mixed bag, but the entire left wing of the Democrat Party was actually supporting Sanders, and they view, with some justification, no doubt, and maybe even a lot, similarly to with the Trump folks, with the election, that you know, Sanders was deprived of the nomination. That actually was what got me my sympathy towards that view, by the way. So you understand, I'm not some partisan, or I don't, that's not my agenda, is not election guarantees for one party or another. I said, you know, that I thought Pete Buttigieg was, and the shadow app, this, I think, was built by Zuckerberg's team that was like murked out, subcontracted to develop this shadow app. And the shadow app was what was used in the, I know, right? It was actually called Shadow, was actually used to change the outcome of the Iowa straw poll and other things like that. So it was like basically the stuff against Sanders, whose job it was to be taken out. And then his job was to be taken out and then to rile up the BLM Antifa masses. And the information war was very well thought out. I mean, using a normal pattern you see in the Middle East, like with ISIS, while conservatives and MAGA, which are two different groups, by the way, but while conservatives and MAGA, even though you can be both, right, were showing how we're talking and you know, upset about these Democrat, you know, Antifa BLM. If you talk to Antifa BLM, they're like, oh, we hate the fucking Democrats, blah, 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 you see? It's just like Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and how the Saudis used to help finance them and back them. And it was basically like connected to Saudi intelligence working with the cabal, right? Remember that? But if you talk to the guys, they're like, oh, fuck the Saudis. Like if you talk to the Wahhabis, I mean the Salafis that were, you know, hardcore into the, like some of the, like the Bin Laden group, they're like, fuck the Saudis. And likewise, Antifa BLM was like, fuck the Democrats, even though it was funding confirmed that, like, Vote Blue and what was it, Democracy, whatever, the Soros network, and the DNC, all had the funding sources, all the different monies that people contributed that were for BLM actually were Democrat Party. That was proven. It was not denied. And the Democracy Alliance is the name of the network of all these different NGOs and chapters of the Democrat Party and all these different and the national and the DNC too, of course. We say all this because what is this election takes place in the first week of next month. It's like going to be the first Tuesday of next month, whatever that falls on, I think. I could be having a Biden moment about how elections work in my homeland, as I have not, I've not been there in well over a decade now. But, and mostly these like, elections, especially like midterm, like, you know, don't know, don't care. Cause I'm not into, I'm not invested in, I don't view politics through the lens of like, you know, Lakers versus Celtics. You know, like the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar versus Larry Bird showdowns never, you know, never fascinated me. Forgive my dated references, but now you have a, that means that there's a timeline in the US for provocations and escalation, and what it seems that if there, if the US has the present, you know, inflation, okay, without some type of turn to events in Ukraine that compels us to feel somehow like we've been attacked as Americans, what I want to say about elections and my understanding, and I have some pretty, you know, up close and personal, so as opposed to talking about monetary policy, I can definitely talk about this as an insider with elections in the US. They will, they'll have an event that's supposed to push public opinion a certain way, because according to historic modeling, such events have in the past pushed public opinion that certain way. So even if it doesn't push public opinion that certain way, when they do some kind of planned event, they can claim that it pushed public opinion a certain way, so they can use some type of operation, a spectacle, some in the public domain, sometimes people call it like a false flag or a hoax or whatever, okay? And despite that it actually isn't believed or didn't motivate people or didn't sway public opinion or led people to contrary conclusions, like shit blowing up big in Ukraine or Russia in the next couple weeks before November, whatever, Tuesday, first Tuesday, November, is gonna, you know, might prove that, you know, I don't know how in the American thinking, but that being entangled with Ukraine is wrong and we can't send more money and more shit, because look, now it's only fueled and prolonged this conflict that we've been backing the Kiev junta, right? We Americans have been backing the Kiev junta to only prolong the conflict. Okay, that might be the actual backlash from such a thing. But with a well, as Biden described in his own words, and he may have misspoken, but he said with the largest election theft network now in, you know, in practice, in use, that they should be able to guarantee the integrity of their desired election outcome. All right. So it's unclear to me what the actual state, what I saw was at some point a year ago or something, when General Flynn and Lynn Wood and Patrick Byrne had a falling out with Lynn Wood, I guess. I mean, they never really were friends or close, but just had met a few times. But I guess we're backing different kind of similarly named PACs. Maybe they were PACs or super PACs, maybe around election integrity. And maybe they weren't PACs. So maybe they were just businesses. Oh, yeah, I think they were a corporation, LLC. That's right. They were just businesses. But nevertheless, I have not followed because I didn't want to read. I didn't want to read. Well, I'll say this. The way that Flynn speaks is a little annoying to me, but I'm not saying that. I'm not promoting myself as some amicable character that people enjoy listening to, but just saying. And then Lynn Wood, by the way that he was kind of covering himself, he was covering himself in a Jesus robe to make himself acceptable to God or something. It's like the way that some Protestants view. It's like that God's supposed to see Jesus when he sees you. It's like, no, God's supposed to see you when he sees you. But it's just weird. I don't know. It's like, if you're not familiar with how Lynn Wood was communicating, he was just sermonizing all the time and then just calling everyone he didn't like a communist. It degenerated very rapidly, and there was never like a single changed election result in any state, despite all of the, there was no like whatever overturned or recounted or anything that was done in an official way that led to a change from what happened. So you have. See, that's very important for the establishment. Doesn't mean that they were wrong in their claim, by the way. It just means that the establishment doubled down because the demoralization is very important. You don't just conquer the tribe. You have to like fucking demoralize them and show them that resistance is futile and all this stuff. You can't give them even a glimmer of hope. Collapsing empire abroad means fascism at home. Everyone knows that. It's a basic formula. But all the signs, and we've only touched on like two of them. Well, the Russian mobilization and the different election outcomes, election posturing. You're going to see a lot of Italian, et cetera, you know, mercenaries or contractors operating in Ukraine, like with impunity, with a government who's basically network of these Nazis that, like the Ukrainian Nazis, are in power. Despite that, the base is like a pro-Russian kind of populist conservatism. Very, very interesting the way they set that up. In the U.S., of course, there's fascinating layout too, but it's not germane to the conflict, except that, of course, you can see that the MAGA people, as well as the, I'd say about half of the Bernie Sanders left. So that's pretty sizable, right? Because Sanders probably won the, it's probably most Democrats. So, you know, whatever that is, it's because of the way the Electoral College works and where Sanders' views would have been popular. Of course, he won I mean, in reality, he won New York and California, et cetera, regardless of the official shadow app or whatever Pete Buttigieg Zuckerberg outcomes. It was very clear that Sanders cleaned house. So you might say that's 60-ish percent or something, just a PFA value. That means pulled from ass. Just say, just to have a number or something in your head, just say 60% of Democrats are Sanders Democrats. And then so, and Democrats by, I think by registered are like 55 or 60% of voters or something typically, just by registered, because the big public interest and the retirement and the labor and stuff all go out on voting campaigns, but they also have lower turnout because they're lower motivated, lower information voters. I mean, they would just have to be just because of the numbers of them. Unless we say everyone has high information, which therefore means that saying the word high information becomes meaningless. So you would say that's what 30% of Democrats and what 70% of Republicans or something like that? 60% of Republicans, 80% of Republicans, I don't know. Just feeling it. Well, I'm just saying 100, basically 100% of MAGA people, the ones who like Ukraine, because they do exist, must be losing their fucking shit right now, demoralized as hell. But yeah, I think you have, I think that's about right. And that kind of conforms to the outline of the Russia collusion theory, which of course is was a true hoax. It was a hoax that it was a crime or anything improper happened. It was true in the sense that yes, the leaders of countries do meet and they do agree not to attack each other. Pretty remarkable. That was a campaign promise. It was one that was met, one of the first campaign promises ever met, not to start a war. A very important one, in my life. I don't know about yours. I'm about 45-ish, so maybe you've been around longer or not, but in my lifetime there was never a campaign promise met. Well, Clinton was going to protect American workers, ended up doing NAFTA. Obama was supposed to do a public option, not Obamacare, not reorganizing HMOs. That's fucking, that's just Nixon. That's like Nixon plus a little smattering of Hillary. Who the fuck wants that? That's why no one wanted Obamacare. But a public option would have been good. Just a public option. No change in anything. No new buildings built. No new departments of billing established. And that's important. That was an important betrayal, and to further divide the public and confuse people about how healthcare works. It took the MAGA movement to bring public awareness to people who otherwise might have been ignoring the issue because only Democrats talked about it, never did anything about it. But they talked about it. That's their job. But all those signs and kind of the machinations in the US and the lineup of trust to Biden as the, like those, like when insects become under mind control of some other insect, but it's like the parasitic, some adaptative technique, some insects can control the mind of other insects through parasites. Kind of the way that that fungus, very, very, oh, fungus is very advanced. I don't know what fucking planet fungus comes from. Be careful about fungus too. That shit has a mind of its own and can take over the your stomach's mind, send signals to your mind, you know, about being hungry. It can actually, it's adapted to, it's evolved to fuck around with. They know how to trigger your appetite and specific appetites of what it wants to eat, not what you need to eat. Isn't that crazy? I suspect that governments work a lot like this. Just keep in mind that the corporations predate democracy, and corporations showed us how profitable it is to have an institution be commissioned by the crown, but not be the crown, authorized by the crown, but also, hey, you know, no mea culpa when they fuck up or do something crazy. And that establishment of charters, you can see how the concept of the establishment of charters contributed to theories about rotating executive powers. And, you know, because then you can just always have governments that blame the last government and, you know, no mea culpa. All of that setup is meant to be able to quell discontent, maybe further demoralize. I suspect that, unless I'm informed otherwise about the status of election integrity projects, and please educate me. I told you where my read-in on the knowledge was at the moment, right? So it might not be entirely up to speed, but I think if there had been major breakthroughs, I would have been aware. By the way, I'm not trying to conflate changing of election outcomes with new legislation or changes in personnel and changes in procedure officially going into the next election. You know, that would, okay, I'm not conflating those two things. I'm just saying I'm unaware of the success of those or to what extent they're going to be implemented successfully, not in theory, or because Zuckerberg still has that money. He has more now, and he can not, I don't know, anything happened that prevents him from putting another 400 million into this, or 200 million because it's just a midterm or whatever, but you know, into this election. You see what I mean? Like those networks and the and Stacey Abrams people keeping the plantation going. Is the thinking. I'm not actually allowed to have opinions. I don't even have opinions. I'm just a conduit of the ether, okay? I'm going to be like Fox News from now on. I'm going to start saying, people say it's being said. It's being said by Fox News. But yeah, they have a those are not good signs. So I don't know that, however, just because I don't know how much control they think they have on that election, but certainly everyone is connecting. The point being that everyone, just like in Europe, is connecting the inflation crisis with the, you know, the energy crisis, let's say, with the support for, you know, Tucker Carlson called it like an uppity foreigner in a t-shirt, right? Zelensky. I think Carlson's writer was almost mocking their own audience a little bit there. Almost had a few layers there. Great writers. I think they were like, yeah, I'm not going to get into the writers, but they're all people around Richard Spencer and stuff. That was the whole Tucker Carlson plan. That mean that he's a obviously controlled thing. I mean, you know, Fox News, come on, right? So, but they were like, oh no, this like Richard Spencer is the threat, like in terms of basically just adopted his politics is what Tucker Carlson did. made called himself a nationalist and all of this. Not a white nationalist, but a nationalist. So, you know, nationalist that mostly white people like. But it's not my fault that his writers are tapped into the, you know, the public vein. They're like, they know. And that's why, like, pretty much everything he says lands, doesn't it? Yes, it does. This is all out of the alt-right and the kind of interplay between the, like, early Russian and a pre-Trump kind of information war dialogue, like 2010, 2012. And when they figured out that these people wouldn't have met if it wasn't for Facebook, and then Zuckerberg had to testify, it's like, so it's just the whole thing is hilarious. So you have those. Now there are other factors too. Besides the election, you have the general strike in France. Of course, everything is political, but what else do you see? Social, political things. We said we weren't going to get into markets because I don't want to like promote a particular angle that I don't have the background to support an opinion on. But we can look at the social movements. We can look at the posture, the troop movements. We have the Belarusian militaries, we said, now becoming involved, right? And they've been painting, now the Belarusians are going to come in, they have their symbol is going to be, I think, like it is said so far from three sources that might be mirroring each other to an extent, but that the Belarusian symbol will be like a triangle with a Z in it. This is a combined force with Russian, probably means Russian advisors and Russian special forces, such as the nature of the relationship of Belarus and Russia anyhow. So, like in the corporate and public sphere as well. I mean, the civilian public and the corporate sphere as well. So I'm not surprised that they would mirror that practice in the military arena. So that is particularly unnerving because things have happened in kind of a slow motion that we would have, had they happened all at once, me saying to you now that this conflict is going to really seriously escalate in a major way. Like, this is very, very disturbing. In fact, would be obvious. Okay. Like, bear in mind that we already understand that Poland entering the conflict means that Belarus is entering the conflict, and then what from there? And we're actually already at the then what from there, because now we have Belarus entering the conflict. Well, oh, did Poland enter the conflict? Well, how many Polish soldiers are there is the question to ask, not what document did the Polish government sign. That's not the question to ask. The question to ask is, how much Polish hardware is in Ukraine, and how many Polish soldiers are there? You see, or we should say, how many soldiers from Poland, or more correctly, in the modern parlance, how many people from Poland are in Ukraine? I think that you have somewhere between 8,000 and 15,000. I understand whatever that number was, it's half as much now. I mean, I think 4 or 5 thousand in Polish soldiers have already been returned home in body bags to Poland. So that's, I mean, as a consequence of the entire conflict so far, but I think from the especially after the events in September and early October, but really those that week or two in the middle of September. So this is all very, very to me. Now you can see, oh yeah, this is like Belarus is responding, and I mean it's not saying it like such. Even though when it was happening, when it looked like Poland might enter the conflict, of course they entered the conflict in this way. They did it by changing the laws in Ukraine to give basically diplomatic immunity to Polish people in Ukraine, people being contractors, mercenaries, or you know, but when they're there, and then we got the, and you guys saw it too, the Polish command, you know, sub bases or trench bases and stuff there, and where was it? And Dnipropetrovsk, they're there, right? They're there. And today, the only confirmed Belarusian soldiers in Ukraine have been, just, I don't know, randoms not supported by the Belarusian state fighting on the Ukrainian side. Maybe four or five guys or a couple dozen guys, I don't know, but maybe more than that. But just in terms of the ones I've seen interviewed in Radio Free Europe propaganda. You know, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe stuff on YouTube seems to be about that. So, Belarus in the conflict. The official declarations that from Lavrov, from the foreign ministry, that Russia has no. Has no platform to engage any, you know, leading NATO power on the United States, I think, exclusively, rather, I should say. So strike any leading NATO power, with the United States. Russia said that it has nothing to discuss with the United States. This is a, all right. That is a very bad diplomatic posture. The if you read on history of the Cuban Missile Crisis, you'll see a lot of parallels in certain ways. Actually, it's frightening the lower level of dialogue taking place. I'm not talking about the de-escalation maneuvers. I'm talking about the climate in the months leading up to it, then the brinkmanship with the policies of deploying the missiles into Turkey, the NATO or the US missiles into Turkey, and the Russian response of wanting to deploy their missiles on Cuba, right? That is very, very that parallel very much with what we have, what we're looking at right now. So now, yeah, this is not good. Serbia, the political situation here is very, very unstable in reality because, the coming crisis will see a destabilization that the government is prepared to weather. And such a crisis, although the Russians are helping to co-manage the important policy decisions in maneuvering such a crisis, and the Russians have a crisis response base in Serbia. The West Balkans can be the linchpin, as it has been historically. And like I said, I see patterns that destabilize the world. And you can see that playing out now, because now that Serbia has been embargoed and we don't have that same amount of access to, this is oil that travels by boat, is a named sanctioned thing. Basically, what the EU did is they said that because they're sanctioning themselves on it, and because EU countries were transit countries, I guess they have transit language in the language of the sanctions. Remember that featured in the crisis with Russia over with Lithuania. So I think this is with the Kaliningrad passage, rather, and how the EU sanctions were interpreted about transiting Russian goods. Now, from the Russian argument, okay, it meant it was not subject to the, even the own language of the EU sanctions, because it was transiting it from Russia to Russia, and it was only transiting through the EU. Now, in this case, it's transiting from Russia to Serbia, okay, which is not in the EU, but it's not Russia. But you can see now, precisely because of this, just look at like what brought Japan into World War II and the games over oil and rubber that were being played against Japan, right? I'm not supporting or justifying, you know, Tojo or Hirohito or the Empire's ambitions in any way. I'm just talking about the way things were played and teased out to draw Japan into a necessary conflict. Once these issues of, like, I think oil and rubber were came to the fore, it had been toyed with. And the blockade against Serbia now doesn't mean that we don't have any oil, okay? And it was not the only way that we get oil, but it was a major way, and it's going to drive the price up effectively. So I think the government believes they have other sellers and ways to get similar volume or adequate volume, but at a much higher price. And so this is going to affect prices here. Also, Serbia is not North Korea, so we don't produce all that. It's not like, even though we're not in the EU, obviously you go to supermarkets and it's like very similar or identical to, even though we have a lot of Serbian and Yugoslavian brands and like Bosnian and Croatian stuff, and those probably are half or more than half, really, so that's good, of what's on the shelves. You still have stuff made outside of the Balkans. You still have like German and whatever, like a lot of Italian and German stuff, just like in EU countries, that stuff from Hungary. And so in the same way that all this affects their prices, it affects our prices too, right? I mean, it's just, and everything from the, you know, car, used car market, obviously, is a European market. It's not a national market. Prices are related to that. So you can see in many areas, and obviously raw materials for production come from all over. So just because we still have the Friends of Russia gas rate, okay, that relationship with Russia only accounts for some 60% of our energy intake. So even though we're not being hit with the prices that the EU is being hit with directly for a number of, you know, reasons that you can see now downstream and basic economic reasons, because everything's connected, we're basically feeling it just about the same. I would say identical at the end of the day. That's not going to push people in Serbia to protest against Vucic to get into the EU or something like that. But no, it's just going to be add more fuel to the fire, and it's going to be a mess in Serbia because such a political crisis might be designed to push, or might be, and it might even be the rational choice even, okay, once you're in the situation to push Serbia to do something on Kosovo to not distract but to draw in and to reorient the energies of these ultranationalist protesters against Vucic, who now will be told, well, here then, here's a gun, here's a backpack, here's a armored vehicle, join this brigade and go. Right? Serbia is your main obsession. So let's do it, bro. Let's save Serbia. So I think that can be a thing that Serbian authorities do. And that could mean it might not even be wise to attack Serbia on two fronts at once. If you wanted to draw them into something in Kosovo, you might avoid moving on Bosnia, but they could pull the Bosnia trigger too. Now, today is a particularly warm day as we get into as we approach November. It's a particularly warm day here in Belgrade. Quite warm. But winter comes no matter what. No matter how many good days you have, winter is coming. And all the bills will be settled. All the accounts will be paid, and everyone will have to show their hand. This is a moment that is, you can say, when does it happen? It's like, well, this conflict began in February, and things that we were saying would be milestones in the total calamity and increase of this conflict, I mean, in a major way, have already all been hit. I mean, just do the math. Russia declared that NATO is de facto a party to the conflict. Russia mobilized 400,000 troops new. They also, separate from that partial mobilization that Zhirinovsky quote unquote predicted, because he was quote unquote opposition, we call that, well, you can call that controlled opposition, or what you might call it, loyal opposition is the Orwellian way to say it. I was gonna say the British way to say it. Same thing. If the Kerch bridge bombing, the assassination of Dugin's daughter, the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline. Like if these had all happened when they would have intuitively kind of happened, like how you think about war, that would have been like in what, April, May? And you've been like, oh fuck, this is gonna be a hot summer. But they kind of drew it out. There's different reasons for that. Cooler heads prevail at times, and sometimes strategies involve drawing things out. So a lot of different things to play. Europe, the French thing, we didn't really elaborate the significance of the protest. It's just that you have to understand that the yellow vests, let me explain. The yellow vests phenomenon was, and I was the only person to say this. I was the first person to say, I don't know if I'm still the only person saying this. Okay, but this is my area of to say this. The yellow vest was Russia's, you know, kind of very first big public color revolution tactic deployed against France or the French authorities, in favor of French people, really, but against the French authorities. And I'll put color revolution like in scare quotes, but it's just basically the fact that you would have had to be French to really know what was going on if it wasn't for RT. RT was really the only, it actually, they tried to make it like it's not happening. You can see now with the blackout of RT that they wanted to prevent Russia from having information war access to Western audiences that might inform those different audiences about what's kind of going on, like how people would have known both about the yellow vests from the, you know, a number of years ago, and also known about the truckers, caravan kind of strike stuff in Canada recently, right? Because, you know, groups like on Facebook and social media get canceled or whatever, banned or deleted by Facebook administrators when they get into these subjects, right? When they get to have more than like 10 or 20, 30,000 followers or members or whatever, they just delete them. So yeah, all of those are the factors to keep in mind. There's more we can develop, but just focusing on this one about how publics become aware of, I mean, there were events, there have been labor and like a coalition between labor and small businesses growing. That's the one that the oligarchs are terrified of. All of politics is dividing labor from small business, by the way. I'll include medium business with small business just to understand. But all of politics is about dividing labor from community business. So really about dividing labor from community. Dividing labor from Main Street. You bring those forces together and you have a something bigger than what you saw even with Trump and MAGA. because that was still, especially the second election campaign, for a lot of reasons in the messaging. It was, despite Trump's final words on his way out, about the struggle going beyond left and right, he played into that dichotomy in the second election much more than in the first. But that was because of the relationship between China and Florida as a swing state. I know, China as a theme and Florida as a swing state, and the World Economic Forum. I'm just playing upon this idea that corporatism, socialism, Marxism, all the same thing, like fascist, like kind of just playing on that theme Trump did. Which works very well on some segment of the population and is totally like a nonsense divisive thing to other segments of the population. But in the absence of Trump and that type of phenomenon going into this next election, I don't know what the perceived outcomes are going to be. I think absence of Trump being the main attraction. Obviously, he's made his endorsements. People still follow his over a million followers on Telegram, other platforms, Truth and others that has a presence, a large following. So this is all that, whatever considerations about the posture, the political posture, but with social movements and controlling them, anything kind of patriotic that pops up in response to the crisis in the U.S., the looming crisis in the U.S. They have energy. They're shielding themselves as much as they're insulating as much from possible themselves, which is good, you know, on that sense of it. But from their policy on Europe, Europe's actually more than anything, you can see that this is a U.S. aggression against Europe, and you know, forcing them to have sanctions. It's actually sanctioning Europe. Europe's the one that is being sanctioned. It's being forced by the United States. Russia's like it's their situation already stabilized. I mean, it's never been that great for a lot of people in Russia, but the point is that we've allowed ourselves to imagine that things were actually better in Europe, and they weren't. That was all just chauvinism and propaganda, that we believed that we had a higher standard of living. Do you know how the British live, dude? Like, they still don't have access to adequate dental care. And I see people regularly live like in 350. I see regularly the English people living in Great Reset dimension apartments. Again, I guess they always have. I guess the Great Reset is actually a return to like Dickensian England. Incidentally, it's crazy. If you ever listen to UK media, they actually think that, like, they still think that if the British military gets involved, that this is like if England sanctions a country, or if the British get involved, that this means something. Like, still in their country, they believe that there's still like a economic or military power of some consequence. Isn't that weird? So I project that that will be how it is in the U.S. for a number of decades to come, maybe even 40 or 50 years, if the information bubble kind of remains the same. And I'm not saying that it will, but just that's why projections are always, many asterisks come after them based upon present trends. Yeah. And even at a time now where you can see clearly the U.S. is not militarily engaged in Ukraine
in a conventional way because it never really had a conventional war policy that involved its own military fighting a war in Europe. Everything of NATO bases and the deployments was all about deterrence and potential and raising the stakes and causing a cost, like creating a very high cost for sovereignty for the USSR, creating a very high security cost for the USSR. Not that they ever believed that Atlantis' forces could ever win a conventional land war in Eurasia. They know from Vietnam and Korea and World War II that this is not advisable. Hold on just a second. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We're going to touch on one or two other factors that tell me that this conflict is escalating immensely and without a doubt in my mind at this time. Observing things now, seeing them all in context, just putting our thinking caps, remembering the things that we already know, looking at all the events that have happened. So let's think about that some more. We'll be back in about 10 seconds, 30 seconds to get back into it. When the Russians say that things are going as planned, it's not a lie, but it's also not the most clear thing that you can say. What they mean is that things are happening within the potential array of things that we've made contingency plans for. So they plan for multiple different things going, you know, they plan on multiple different directions. That's contingency planning. They relate to semiotics or flow charts. Semiotics in the sense of flow charts, like primitive semiotics. So it's ugly. I'll tell you what, it's ugly. I'm trying to look directly, and this is why I asked you guys to tell me your prices about things, because we're mostly in the countries experiencing the crisis. And I'm not someone that wants to just listen to what Russians are saying is happening into, you know, my own fucking country. You see what I'm saying? So that's not reliable to me. It's just, it might make me aware of something that I need to look into and see if the Russian version of events checks out. And like, for whatever reason, about 70% of the time it does. And that's a much higher accuracy rate these days, for whatever reason, than a lot of the legacy Western media institutions. Okay, they seem to be at around 20% accuracy, you know, as a PFA estimation. Hey, fuck off, cat. Sorry, that's my cat. Hey, are you arguing with me? Uh-huh. That's Nilufar. Nilufar Galici. So they have a big problem with controlling energy prices going into the winter, and I don't want to rely on what Russians are saying about that, because, you know, we live here. I can just look at the prices myself, but I'm in Serbia, so then I know it's actually not the same as Europe, like something else is going on. And it's why I can tell you about what prices are in Serbia versus European Union. It's a little bit less still. I mean, it's always been less. But it seems that the US, and we talked about this way early on. We talked about this, talking about the Great Reset, actually. So we, because energy is actually a big part of this Great Reset. We said, what, over a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, we said that the US could always do an end run on Europe and pull out of the kind of the Great Reset agenda, like a fucking what's that game, chicken? Remember in Rebel Without a Cause, James Dean and that other dude, and they have that race off the cliff. Remember that? So like the US and Europe are like in a game of chicken, but the US like knows the terrain, you know? And the US is gonna jump out of that car and Europe's gonna go right off the fucking cliff. Like, what was his name? Butch? Butch! I think that was the cry from the girl waving the checkered flag or whatever. Anyway, so they have like the whole plot against Europe is a deep state plot, and that means they have whole layers of European leadership in on it, and you see the dissent, and you can see the fight, and you can see when the European like both like private banks and the industry are pushing back against the, you know, suicide by lights off and against this policy on Russia. And you have like in Germany, you have a kind of these older establishment figures like Schroeder and stuff who would come out time to time and say the thing that was even more Russia sensible than Merkel, right? So very interesting which way the Germans will go, of course. But suffice it to say that the English and the Americans and the Australians are on the same side, and they and the AUKUS countries, hold on, let me deal with Niloufar. Niloufar, I need to have a word with you. You go over here. I got you. Don't argue with cats. They always win. And they get the last word in too. New Zealand is like this experimental hangout zone of interaction, of having extreme interaction between China and AUKUS. I'm saying New Zealand representationally, like conceptually, even more so than Canada, even more so than Australia. But you know, I think Australia has had to kind of shore up on that image problem. But certainly Canada is very well known for its China cozying. By the way, we don't say, we say China, we always refer to, well, more as detailed in our last episode on China, we're talking about the export industry and the cabal. Democrats and the Chinese Communist Party, Democrats and the Long Beach Port Authority. So there was truth to those claims. There was, you know, not the way I said it, but basically it was true. Different power groups in China. And that takes us to China. Another indication is that China has just, in the last day, to consolidated behind its basically
new direction leadership, new direction under XJP. And he's going into a third term, which is Obama unprecedented, and means that the establishment is locking up, like, very tightly around and in support of, to be clear, XJP, this kind of new vanguard, police kind of cleanup sting operation, group in China. They're also worried about selling sovereign assets or whatever to the West, and whatever Soros and whatever their big claims are, they're very cautious about this. Looking at the direction of the export, if you know, it's almost inconceivable without COVID theatrics and the supply line situation, in many ways, was rational cooling off of supply line stuff that could have made the talk of war, potential of war, and chatter of war, and the adverse effects of seeing that war is coming can be just like a run on the bank, for example, can be just as destructive to economies and populations as the war itself. Disruptive to supply line, things like that. But having wound those down first, does not force China to enter on the side of Russia prematurely. I mean, prematurely from the perspective of how things look now, which is precisely looks like they've given some shape to that, to the terrain of this virtual battlefield of time and timelines and potentials. Talking about the Atlanticists have given some shape to this in some way. How would they have responded if China had unilaterally or first basically cut off the West from the same volume of imports? So very, very interesting things happening. And now with, you know, kind of in the minutiae and these developments and the markings that the Belarusian tanks are getting with the Z on them, and formation of the joint battalion in Belarus, and the embargo on Serbia. It looks very bad for Ukraine's ability to have another mobilization round. I don't know if it would be the 7th or the 8th mobilization. By the way, if you forgot, so Russia's had one, you know, Russia-sized partial mobilization. Ukraine has gone through a handful of mobilizations already. There's a lot of focus in Atlanticist press on Russia's pressures and Russia's weaknesses in terms of the mobilization and opposition to it. What the fuck do you think's going on in Ukraine? On the, you know, third to the second power mobilization. That can't be good. I bet a lot of Ukrainians in Odessa are thinking themselves more and more as Odessans than Ukrainians. People are normal and they have friends, and normally Odessa, it's like people are different things, but they're all friends. It's not a thing to be a particular thing in a city like Odessa. That's what makes it a Russian city. Because Russia is not an ethno-nationalist state. But all of this does not look good. And all of it, and all, of course, oh, can we forget that we're having a public conversation, like publicly in the media, about to what extent a nuclear war is acceptable or not? To what extent a limited strike is, you know, something smart? Maybe if we can just preemptively strike Russia's nukes, then they won't launch the ones that we didn't strike. That makes a lot of fucking sense, doesn't it? But that's what's being tossed about in the public discourse. This is Washington Post and New York Times. This is happening now, this week, as we speak, in reality. Okay? So focus on that fucking fact for a moment and put it in the context of this now laundry list of things we've pointed towards as being this being very big shit popping off, to put it in the vernacular. I'm going to look at a few of your comments. I'm going to take 15 seconds, and we'll be back to answer your comments and questions and conclude and why it is that I want you to buy. I'm selling tubs of dehydrated food to survive the war that's coming. No, I'm just kidding. I'll be right back. So starting with our comments, seems to me that America has been in perpetual October surprise for a few years now. Well, yeah, it has been. I don't think I'll ever vote again, and I'm in Massachusetts. Yeah. Stuart Anderson is asking, where are the talking points coming from? I can't see any chat with questions that XF has responded to, so it sounds disjointed. Yeah, you know what? I look at kind of questions, and I pull up from questions from like yesterday as well, in no particular order. But right now I'm looking at today's questions for the first time. Yes, I was more building a thesis. How is this going to escalate? We have strike on the pipes, the assassination of Daria, the suicide bombing of the bridge, the Russia de facto gone from SMO to CTO with a counterterrorism operation. Yeah, it's a strange. I think that a counterterrorism operation to me just seems like a lower scope of operation, just in the lexicon than a special military operation. But I've heard that term, you know, anti-terrorism, like an ATO, like an anti-terrorism operation being used generally. But see, the thing is that to me sounds too much just like the cleanup and security of the four republics. Of that, to me, that just sounds like a anti-terrorism within the four republics, and that the defense of the four republics is anti-terrorism. That doesn't sound like a forward. That doesn't sound like a forward-looking to me. Just saying how the term resonates, so that people whose job it is, maybe people listening, can figure that out how to talk about it in the future. It seems to be how things go anyway. So, a counterterrorism operation has a feel of a and sound of a lower escalation of conflict.
Lisa saying there's no organized pushback against ballot counting software. David says it should be obvious that Poland was always going to be getting involved. Russia has people all over east of Dnieper. Galicia is full of Poles. And then south of them is Hungarians. Kiev is really the capital of Galicia. I don't know. I don't know if Russia would agree with you about Kiev. but I know what you mean. Like historically, or maybe. I'm not sure. I think that's more like Lvov, even though that's kind of like Poland too. But the thing with some of these Banderas is that there's Galicians, and then there's like the Galicians that had been kind of semi-Policized, and those are the ones that had the biggest conflict with the Poles, interestingly. Almost, I mean, not counterintuitively, in fact, maybe counter-narratively, but not counterintuitively, but certainly it's an interesting tidbit. The Jupiter missiles in Turkey is always omitted from the Cuban Missile Crisis story in the West. Yeah, I didn't omit it, that's for sure. But yes, thanks for pointing that out. Okay, so we're getting guys informing us that no, stopping the oil to Serbia mainly means blocking the Danube. Okay. Yeah, we talk about how that has been a historic, actually. We're actually using references to water as being a cause of war, like not letting things come down the river, not letting water come down the river, for example, would be something that you could do. We're talking about things that you do from within your own sovereign territory where you're not actually placing a force in or upon or over or under or assaulting their sovereign territory or their forces, but you're using like a waterway, cutting off water, something like that, that like a river that goes through two countries. We talked about that in the past as being a source of conflict. I can speak to what we eat. I can speak very well to what we eat and or was available in Serbia. And it is, all the, like we were talking about, obviously you're talking about packaged food, right? We're not talking about what isn't packaged, which is basically meat and vegetables, but packaged food and maybe dairy, right? Although that's packaged, but it's not, it's non-durable. And a lot of packaged food is also durable. And it isn't non-perishable, but I guess the shelf life is more than 2 years or something. Anyway, so Susan is asking, so what is the overall goal of the cabal for all these ridiculous policies? Okay, well, that's a very good question. This is one that we actually talk about at length quite frequently. And what it best looks like is happening overall is that there were many events that were going to happen eventually, which of course, you know, changing policy or law here and there can, you know, make happen a little faster or a little later, but otherwise inevitable. And what it looks like is while there are attempts to hold on to power, or rather their attempts to project power toward like over Russia or over China or over other parts of the developing world. I'm not including Russia and China in the developing world. I just meant, or parts of the developing world.
they could see that they were losing control, and they built a narrative that was all about them being in control now and in the future, you know, using technology and a reset test agenda. But for that agenda to really succeed, they need their global competitors to be vanquished. So, you know, they modify their plans to then have a limited success where they don't vanquish their opponents, but they have great influence and control over the range of possibilities of outcomes and movements of their opponents. And then even here, then the question is, can the Great Reset agenda be implemented in, you know, one part of the world, while other parts of the world, you know, might continue on almost like business as usual? So that's kind of what's going on right now. So David is asking, what he wants to know, what he's curious to know, is what is the next step after Russia blacks out Ukraine? Seems possible that they may do something to jam Starlink too. Yeah, I think they are doing things to jam Starlink. I think we're revving up to hear Starlink news, and on the Russia end, I don't know what Elon Musk is. I know that he basically said, okay, well, we'll keep donating the 20 million and the equipment or whatever, but he just kind of already put it out there that this is happening now. Blacking out Ukraine. Serves a lot of purposes. All of them that you would imagine have already thought about, besides information war and all that. You know, that's just part of it. I think that I think Russia tried to show that you can do like an information war and the actual thing at the same time. And in retrospect, looking now and how it looked like what the Russians were aiming to do and what kind of happened, I think that the actual Ukrainian counteroffensive, okay, and I'm not answering any particular question here. By the way, normally when I'm speaking, and if it's disjointed, I'm drawing in different things, and what I normally do is I tie things back in. It just takes a while for us to work in because I don't present the thesis like A, B, C, D, E, F, and then you're making your mind up about how wrong I am instead of listening to why I think it is. I just lay out all the points. You see what I mean? And I go through like my process of thinking on it and what led me to it, so that we're standing side by side, kind of looking at the same horizon instead of like squaring off, you know, exchanging, you know, blows. So that's why I present it like that, because then you're kind of having the same realizations at the same time that I am. Trump does not have a Telegram. He stated that publicly. It's a fake account. The Trump Telegram is not, I don't know who runs it, but it might not be run by Trump, but it only publishes, it's definitely, if you look at the channels that it recommends linking, you can see exactly what network of MAGA is running it. So it is MAGA. And it is also, it's only publishes the things that he says. It doesn't have other things. Okay. So people understand I am in Serbia. Okay. Can you explain more about this attack on a Polish contingent near Donetsk? Yes. Polish contractors made up a large number of the mercenary percentage of the mercenaries involved in the high casualty incurring Ukrainian pushes in actually in yes in on that front, in the Donbas front, where it was, I think it might have been near Donetsk, this particular, but this is that's all I have on it. That was just what the Russian Foreign Ministry reported. And so I've seen photographic evidence corroborating, but not proving the numbers or anything, just of the Polish presence. But setting aside the potential accuracy, misinformation, or whatever of the Russian claim, what's important is that this is Russia's position, that they killed Polish forces as whatever private contractors or whatever, but that's just a potato, potato, column A, column B. That's an accounting and an accountability issue more than anything else. So they're involved. And the point is that Russia sees them as involved. I know nothing about tactical nukes being intercepted. I haven't gotten into that. But yeah, feel free in your chat to share up whatever that story going around is. But can't speak to its veracity in any way. So because of the general so just to conclude, just because of the general rate of things, the general pace of things, a lot of milestones. The thing is, actually, this is really about your own memory. This is not about my argument. This is actually about your own memory and about you remembering that all the milestones that were going to happen that you would know meant that this war is escalating, have actually, you know, whatever, 7 out of 10, or let's say have been hit, right? Or 8 out of 10 milestones that you're like, oh yeah, this is it. I mean, each one of them was a no going back thing. The assassination of Dugin's daughter, the blowing up of the Kerch Bridge, the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline, the this, the that. I mean, you know, now the Russian mobilization, the Polish involvement in the conflict. So you can see all this coming together, the posture of the Anglo-Saxons by having zombie mongoloid president, whatever, mind control subject, whatever the fuck they are, whatever the fuck Liz Truss is. We know what Biden, yeah. So I mean, he doesn't even know where he is, right? He didn't know he's alive. But that's the long and short of it. I mean, it's I know there's more. I mean, and that's not even looking at markets. You see what I'm saying? This is just looking at the troop movements, looking at all the things that have already happened, all the things that are happening. You know, we're not saying these are what things will happen, except that this shit's fucking escalating for sure. Peace. I'm out.